it's still a little bit past 3 o'clock. These spots are all. So we should get started because we actually have a fairly tight schedule. I'm Jim Tom. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Information Technology. I'd like to welcome you to this CONSTANT conference. It's a great program, and this is the attendance is just amazing this year. It is regional, so we have people attending from all over the region, as well as from our sister campuses at Columbia and Rolla. It's my pleasure to introduce President Nelson Floyd, President of the University of Missouri, who is here to welcome you and open the conference for us. Thank you.
Well, to you, Jim Tom, thank you very much for that introduction, and thank you for your leadership with our IT initiatives here at the University of Missouri St. Louis. To Chancellor Tom George, I applaud your leadership and direction that you're carrying this fabulous institution. And to our students, faculty, staff, community people, and other visitors to the university, there is no doubt that the University of Missouri St. Louis is at the cutting edge of change. This technology conference is yet but one more expression of the excellence and the commitment and the forward thinking of this campus and what it is engaged in. Last year, I had the privilege of opening this conference as well. I did it electronically, however. I was in Columbia at the time, and there was an open mic, so I heard a lot of comments made about a whole host of things. I think it was unbeknownst to the audience that the mic was open for a while. But it really does, I think, just sort of underscore the ubiquity associated with much of our work and our activities, and the infusion of technology in virtually every aspect of our lives. You know, the world that we're in now is fundamentally different than the world that we were in just yesterday, and the world tomorrow will be fundamentally different than that. Our students are making a different set of decisions when they are selecting colleges or universities to attend. All of our institutions right now are engaged in a significant effort to retrofit the residence hall systems, and we're trying to do it as best we can with the existing capabilities. But we are learning very quickly, as you know, here on this campus, opening your new residence hall about 2 months ago, that it really does require a fundamentally different way of looking at the structures and the activities associated with our work and our involvement. You know, students are asking a series of vastly different questions than they did before. You know, they want to know about bandwidth, and they want to know about the capacity. And it is that set of decisions that will inform whether or not they will choose to come to an institution. And they want to know the extent to which the technology is available for their use, and they want to do it in a ubiquitous way in which they can always be in contact with those individuals they want to seek those types of connections with. You know, I grew up the oldest in my family, and I have three other brothers. And when I made the decision to go to an institution, it had nothing to do with technology. In fact, it had a lot to do with the institution that I could afford to go to. Well, it ended up that I went to the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and I'll make the story really short. But I was actually relieved when I only had one other person sharing the bedroom with me at my residence hall, because I was used to having three of my brothers in the same room, you see. But now, almost all of our young people are used to having their own bedrooms, and they have their own technology around them, and they want to be able to use it whenever they want to. And so this conference is important because it looks at the intersection between teaching and learning and technology. And that's an area that all of us need to spend more and more of our time thinking about and being able to engage in, and how we can use those technologies to its maximum advantage and benefit for the students that we serve, making sure that we provide our faculty with the essential tools to conduct their teaching and research and service in a way that's not going to be intrusive in their scholarship and activities in that regard. You know, roughly 21% of students who are coming into our colleges and universities at this point will have not only a desktop, but a laptop as well. But there is also a generation of students, especially minority students and low-income students, without that type of capability. So to a certain extent, they are behind the curve, and we have an obligation and a responsibility as educators to make sure that we catch them up as quickly as we can. We also have to make sure that we are providing the appropriate technology for the engagement that our students need to have today while preparing them for the challenges that will confront them in the future. Many of you have been reading The World is Flat, and you know that there is a fundamentally different paradigm that's being discussed. And I won't go through the essence of it, but what I will say is that our colleges and universities today must make sure that they are at the cutting edge of pedagogy, the infusion of what needs to happen in our instructional programs, how we can appropriately use technology. There is a wonderful group, Chancellor George, that you have assembled around you, from your provost to your director of teaching and learning to your chief technology officer, who really understand those issues. And my challenge to the students is please make sure that you fully utilize the resources that are at your fingertips. If you're able to do that, not only will it have a measurable impact on what happens now, but it will have a long-lasting impact on what happens when you leave the borders of the University of Missouri-St. Louis, because we are now understanding as an academy, better today than we did in the past, that education is a lifelong process. And our students today want information whenever they want it, however they want it, what medium they want it. And there is a fascinating conversation that's ongoing now about how students then receive that information and how they translate it. One final comment. I have maintained for a long time now that our curriculum needs to take a much broader look at what we do. And the whole notion of silos and disciplines that we have become very familiar with will change in a very dramatic way, both now and into the future. Interdisciplinary efforts, looking across the curriculum rather than in silos, will be the norm of what happens within the academies, the truly great academies in this country. You're going to have more university professors who will come in with benefit from a whole variety of disciplines that will inform their teaching and that will inform their scholarship. And they will then develop these cohorts of individuals who will then help them with their work and their activities. I also challenge the academy broadly to think about graduate education in a fundamentally different way. You know, when I was getting my PhD, it was a very singular experience. That is, I worked as a unit of one in my research and my writing and the other scholarship that will then be a derivative of it. But now we know, with the plethora of information that's around us, the voluminous nature of what happens, that we need to develop cohorts and share that information in ways that we have not before. Well, nonetheless, you're going to hear much about those pedagogical theories and what will happen in the total transformation of our work and our activities. And so my charge to you is to welcome you to this conference, to tell you how important it is for you to participate in a very active way in this conversation and dialogue. That's the only way that you can be the leaders of tomorrow. And I must tell you, we're relying on you very much in that regard. For you will hold the key to success and prosperity, not only for the University of Missouri-St. Louis, but where we go as an academy. I'm humbled to be in your presence. I'm honored to be here today. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much, President Floyd. I'm Tom George, and I'm the Chancellor here. That's my boss that just spoke. And we're really very pleased that he was able, with his extremely busy schedule, to come from Columbia and participate in this conference. But that signifies the importance of this conference to President Nelson Floyd and to the University of Missouri system as a whole. The President's been leading a major effort in technology in our system, and the coordination across our campuses with the system office, extension, and so forth, I think, is as good as anywhere you're going to see in the country. So he certainly appreciates the importance of technology, not just in teaching, but in everything that we do. Talking about the silos that President Floyd mentioned, while we're having this very important fifth annual conference focusing on teaching and technology here at the JCPenney building, over in the Two Hill Performing Arts Center, we've got another technology conference going on at the same time. And this is trying to eliminate the silos among different entities we have in the county of St. Louis. We have higher education, and we have government, and we have industry. And the idea there now is to look at how the wireless communication and technology as a whole is integrating across all these sectors and how we can move further on in the 21st century. So again, this is kind of a technology, you know, time today and yesterday and tomorrow. This conference just grows and grows. We're getting representation now across the state, and we have participants as far east as the state of Indiana now. This is the fifth one. I do want to mention two colleagues that have a lot of responsibilities for making this a success. One is Peggy Cohen. She's the Associate Provost for Professional Development and Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning. And Peggy, if you could stand up, please. Peggy actually initiated this conference back in 2002. And then Jim Tom, a bit more recent to campus, he's our Associate Vice Chancellor for Information Technology. So Jim, if you could stand also, please. And he's worked hard to make this conference a success. And then finally, we do have a conference planning committee. So if members of the committee that are here now in the audience, if you could stand, please, and we can acknowledge you. Now, getting on with the real activity of this plenary session is our invited speaker from Indiana, and it's my real privilege to introduce our keynote speaker, Dr. Curtis Funk. Kurt received his master's and his PhD degrees in educational psychology from the University of Wisconsin. He's now a professor of educational psychology and also instructional systems technology in the School of Informatics at Indiana University in Bloomington. He's a founding member of the Center for Research on Learning and Technology at IU. He's a senior fellow with the Advanced Distributed Learning Lab within the Department of Defense, and actually I participated actively in that when I was in Wisconsin before moving here, and that's a very exciting project, and the fact that he's a senior research fellow there, I'm really impressed. He has received the Cyber Star Award from the Indiana Information Technology Association, the Most Outstanding Achievement Award from the U.S. Distance Learning Association, and the Most Innovative Teaching in a Distance Education Program Award from the state of Indiana. And during the past 2 years, Dr. Bonk has presented over 175 talks around the globe related to online teaching and learning. So actually, I'm surprised he has time to fit us into his schedule, but we're really happy he's able to do that. He's got more than 100 publications on topics such as online learning pedagogy, massive multiplayer online gaming, collaborative technologies, synchronous and asynchronous computer conferencing. He's got a recent book. It's called The Handbook of Blended Learning Environments, Global Perspectives, Local Designs, and this was published a year ago by Pfeiffer Publishing. His presentation this afternoon borrows from the geographic proximity of here to the Wizard of Oz. It's titled Podcasts and Wikis and Blogs, Oh My, Online Learning is Not in Kansas Anymore. And with that, I'll turn this over to Dr. Curtis Funk. Thank you.
I tried jumping, but I was worried I wouldn't be available for the next couple of talks. We do have a mic that's hot here. Testing 1, 2, 3. Yes.
Maybe we do. There we go. Great. Thank you, everybody. Well, now, he'll give the rest of the talk, giving technology, and I'll go sit and listen. Actually, that's all he's good for. We'll get rid of him. Well, I want to make three quick announcements, too. We've had a few announcements here. One is that it's really wonderful to be at a place where there's such support from top levels as well as from everyone across the campus for an event like this. It doesn't happen all the time when I travel to different places, and to see the turnout that we had here as well, and hopefully continued on through tomorrow, it's just fabulous to see. It's my first time speaking in Missouri. I've been through this part of the state a few times for soccer tournaments, but never for speaking. In fact, we stayed really close by here a few times. Second is we have people not only from the East, from Indiana, but we've got some invited scholars who came with me from China and Korea, and all the way from there too for this event. So that's pretty impressive right there. The third is if you ever get a chance to come to Indiana, and I'll check this hat now, please stop by. Our School of Education is a demonstration site for technology and education. We do service, research, and teaching related to technology integration. We were built, our building was built in 92. That's when I showed up at Indiana. I sort of came with the building, was fortunate to be there at the time. And our students in instructional systems technology are second to none. So some of the things I'm able to do, I'm only able to do because of the students and the visiting scholars like I brought with me here today, the people that come with the building. Brick and mortar does matter. It doesn't attract people. Technology does matter. Don't let anyone fool you. It's only about pedagogy or only about technology. This particular talk is about more about the technology side. Tomorrow, I'll be talking about the pedagogical side. But it's those two pieces that go hand in hand with the people, the systems, the culture that you work with. It's the three parts that interact together that we have to think about. I believe that technology provides the nature. Pedagogy provides the nurture, and it's nature and nurture that go hand in hand. And that's why I'm going to talk about both, and I beg and pleaded with Peggy, please let me do at least two talks here so they don't just come away thinking that I'm only talking a lot of bonk about technology. Okay. Well, here in St. Louis, there's a lot going on. Here in Missouri, there's a lot going on in terms of e-learning. I've been doing some tracking during the past couple of weeks, in fact, of what's been going on. There's a recent announcement, in fact, that a virtual school report that came out this week about what's going on in Missouri in terms of endorsing e-learning in e-learning state-sponsored schools, K-12 schools. All sorts of interesting things happening in Missouri. And let me take a let me show you a little bit about what's going on. Now, being that I am a scarecrow, I have to guard the corn. But Halloween's over, so I do have some of that corn left to pass out. Who's the lady with the young kids at home? There you go. Don't let it hit you too hard. Where's my witch when I need her? Where's my witch? Where did she go, my helper? Come on down here. Yeah. Some people might want some candy. If you could give this to them, that would be great. Okay, I'll just leave it right there. Looks like I hit the lady in the head. She's heading to the hospital. Okay. Every time you hear this, Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. First person stands up and says, e-learning's not in Kansas anymore. It's here in St. Louis or it's here in Missouri. We'll get a CD of all my stuff on e-learning plus a gift over here, a coffee mug, t-shirt, basketballs. Of course, I heard you're hot on basketball here in this city. Pens, all sorts of things. First one stands up and says, e-learning is not in Kansas anymore. It's here in Missouri, or it's here in St. Louis, okay? So we'll come back to that here in a second. Okay, you guys are going to be podcasts, you're going to be wikis, and over there you're going to be blogs, okay? Can you say it with me? Podcasts.
Podcasts.
Podcasts. Wikis.
Wikis.
Blogs. Podcasts.
Podcasts.
Wikis. Blogs. Okay. Gotta get warmed up here for a second, okay? Let me get some water here for a second. Some of you may have seen this movie, right? How many of you have seen the movie? Okay. Podcasts. Podcasts, wikis, and blogs. Podcasts, wikis, and blogs. You get it. Okay. Well, state of Kansas. I went and looked at the state of Kansas and the state of e-learning within the state of Kansas. It's a nice state, actually.
It's a twister. It's a twister.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
The governor's got a chat line. I sent her an email because I went to the state websites and was finding all dead links for e-learning. No fooling. I'm not lying here. Go check out e-learning in Kansas. You'll have a lot of dead links. Unlike Missouri, unlike Indiana. So I wrote her and the page can't be found. page after page. E-learning is no longer in Kansas. It's here in Missouri. It's over by me in Indiana. I wrote her a chat, little message, expected a response. She didn't respond to me. I asked her what happened to e-learning in Kansas.
Shucks, folks, I'm speechless.
Then I went to the University of Kansas and wrote to the expert there on e-learning in Kansas, and he didn't respond to me either. I don't know why. But I did find it here in Missouri, as you can see.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Found a few other things here in Missouri that are hot. Now, professional development going on. E-learning professional development. We see community colleges involved in e-learning. I found K-12 schools involved in e-learning in Missouri. And the University of Washington doing a study of space invaders and controlling space invaders with brain waves. That was an interesting study from last month. Okay, let's look at technologies from the 1950s through to today a little bit. Peggy sent me a few little visuals of what kind of technologies people were using in Kansas, not in Missouri, and here's some of the technologies used in Kansas. Some of you may still use these technologies. Nothing wrong with this technology. All technologies are useful. Pens, papers, chalk. Soft technologies, mind tools, problem solving, all sorts of technologies. Now, of course, in Indiana, we had courses where you could label these things. Chalkboards, blackboards, digital media, back in the 50s. Well, Tech Trends magazine last January had a special issue about technologies of 50 years ago. And the point that was being made was that technologies were overwhelming teachers and students back in the 1950s. You know, peg projectors and tape recorders and record players and all these technologies that were coming day after day and we had to wrestle with and deal with. The same is true today, isn't it? You know, technologies will keep coming at us. We have to think about how to be good users of technology, right? Which are the ones that are going to make a difference? If we walked into libraries here today, they would be vastly different than they were in the 1950s. Talking to sub-rarians instead of librarians, right? Well, if we update ourselves into the 1980s, right, for a second.
Isn't a computer control?
Oh, sorry. We've got Tandy Radio Shack computers, $2,400 for 32K drive machines that would handle one of my PowerPoint slides. Okay. How many of you have a TRS Fresh 80 machine? Okay. You might have had one of these Commodore 64s. How many had a Commodore 64? Right? Twice as much memory. You also got one of these machines. Actually, I asked for one of these machines, a personal computer, to my boss in 1983, and he said, "What would someone need a personal computer for?" I was an accountant or a CPA back then. And we were a true blue shop. We were all mainframe IBM machines. We actually developed highly integrated circuit boards, but really didn't believe in personal computing. It was kind of fascinating to work there.
Never sent a human to do a machine's job.
Eventually, we got color on these machines, right?
The computer does not judge. It makes logical selections.
Of course, we got into the 80s, and we got other machines. We got Atari. So many people remember Atari, Pong, and other things, Commodores. We've got clones from Apple. I'm sure we got some Apple users here using their apples as fish bowls today or whatever. Right?
Captain, incoming message.
1990s technologies, blackboard. I heard you're a big blackboard place here. So there goes all my blackboard jokes for today. But Blackboard's sponsoring this, so I guess I'll just move on. No, to be honest, these technologies, learning course management systems and learning management systems, got people in. It got people started. It got people thinking about how to integrate technologies in their classrooms. We now need to move the next step. We need to push on from here to think about creative thinking activities and menus for creative thinking, brainstorming, reverse brainstorming, what-if activities, just suppose. We need to think about critical thinking activities, debates and role plays and other things, critiques and rebuttals that you can do online. We need to think about collaboration and jigsaw activities that you can embed in your classes. Today we wrap around pedagogical techniques, and that's what I'll go through tomorrow with you. We wrap them around Blackboard and WebCT and Desire to Learn and Sakai and Moodle and all these tools. Hopefully in the next 5 or 10 years, we'll have the next generation of these learning management systems and course management systems that will enable us to do some more thoughtful activities within our classes with our students, that will enable us to go beyond what we see here. What do we see here? We see what I saw in 1983 as an accountant in Milwaukee. We see this. Reports by users, reports by items. Well, that's computer log data that any good accountant knows. We can generate that rather quickly. There's no programming skill involved. We need to push the people, Blackboard and LibCT, to start building modules, thinking tools for us to use in our classrooms. Yes, we have communication tools and chat tools and discussion boards, but those existed, the little dirty secret existed before course management systems. We need to push these vendors to create something for teaching and learning. This should be a goal. Personalization of our learning environments was a theme of the ALT conference in Scotland last month where I was. The Advanced Learning Technologies Conference was about podcasts, wikis, and blogs and other ways to personalize learning, to give students some power within the learning environments. It's not about podcasts, wikis, and blogs per se. I'm going to walk through and give you definitions, even though David Johnson just said in his last session, don't bother with definitions. I'm going to give you some anyways. But it's not about those definitions, nor is it about podcasts, wikis, and blogs necessarily. It's about the empowerment of the learners that's taking place. It's about representing their knowledge and being able to evaluate the knowledge that they're representing online. And be able to go back to that knowledge, be able to replay that knowledge, showcase it for them so they can see their changes over time, and to see changes in their thoughts over time. Yes, we've got Duke and Drexel giving away iPods without a plan. Without a plan of how to integrate them, and then they say, oh, wait a minute here, we're not going to give them away anymore, we're going to rent them out to students, we need plans in the classrooms. We've got PDAs, Blackberries, being given away to MBA students in Maryland. We've got tablet PCs given away in many places. I think even Missouri has a laptop program in some places. We've got cell phones in different places. Giveaways to bring students into campus. Technology is being used as a gimmick, especially by private schools, more so than public ones, but being used to entice students to come attend. We now have university systems, Missouri and other places, thinking about how to use handheld devices to send lecture notes, to send podcasts, or vodcasts, video-based, to handheld devices. We have Ball State in Indiana, where students can get their lecture notes every day in the morning before going to class.
God bless the internet.
These are the kids in Missouri, or in Maryland, using their Blackberries in their MBA to organize their thoughts, to organize their ideas. It's not about Blackberries, it's about the organization of knowledge. The technology facilitates that, it's the nature. It's the activities that are wrapped into the Blackberry, that's wrapped into the iPods, or into the wiki activities that's important.
Ouch, now that hurts.
Here's the kids at Duke testing out their iPods, finally doing something with the free tools they got. Okay, two months back, I was in Ohio. And they have a program called Reading First, $30 million project, to train teachers, in part, K1, 2, 3 teachers, how to teach reading skills online, in fact. And at the end of the day, these teachers all got iPods at the end of the workshop. They taught all day from 8 in the morning till 4 at night, and then came to my keynote and a couple other ones until 10 o'clock at night. And at the end, they got these iPods, and they didn't want to go to bed. They ran all these activities. You can see the teachers here. Okay? Podcasts, wikis, and blogs, oh my. Okay, you can see very much engaged in what's going on. Technology was used as a tool to motivate. At the end, after they were trained, in fact. But it was interesting to watch their motivational level just increase tremendously as a result.
Toto?
Okay.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
First one who stands up and yells.
E-learning is not only in Kansas, it's in Missouri and St. Louis.
Hey, all right. Where are you from? You're from St. Louis. Would you like a shirt, a basketball, a towel, a coffee mug, or a pen?
The thing I couldn't hear, the
towel.
Towel.
Give her a CD as well. Okay. The internet. Internet offers us things we couldn't do previously. And I'm going to be getting to that over the next couple of days here. What are some possibilities to address reflective learning activities, visual learning activities, hands-on learning activities, reading, writing, and so forth? I'll go through a lot of that tomorrow, how to motivate people. But the Internet's had a dramatic impact, probably the most profound impact of any technology in history. Okay, and it's something that we're all talking about here at this conference. But it's not just about technology. It's about that intersection between pedagogy, technology, and the people in society and cultures that matter. It's about finding ways to get people empowered, finding ways to get them to reflect on their ideas, share their knowledge, collaborate, juxtapose ideas against one another through concept maps, timelines, taxonomies, whatever it happens to be. But to get them to discuss ideas, to go back to ideas and see the change in one's ideas, to see the starting point and look at their growth over time. And that's what really we all should be thinking about is student growth within a class. Well, sure, it's about cultures. Sure, it's about people. We have many types of people in classes today. A study done by Capella, I think last month, showed that most people over age 25 anticipating continuing their education and getting additional degrees and certifications, hopefully through online or face-to-face or blended environments. But some people are afraid.
I can see you're really upset about
like this woman here.
I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over.
Now, let me point out in your handouts, there's a top three activity. If you could write a couple notes down about some points that you think are important enough to jot down, we're going to discuss those about halfway through. So if you get a chance to jot a couple notes, some points that you see as important, the top three activities, you should say. Just jot a couple ideas. Handouts are in your folders, yes. Of course, then we have the younger generation. Okay, let's take a look at these generations. USA Today last month said kids are in a bubble. Kids are in a technology bubble, right? So, what do we do with these kids? Are we worried about these kids and their technology bubbles and not going outside to play with their friends anymore and setting up like we did as kids? I'm sure a lot of you remember this, setting up baseball games about them, whatever. And they don't do that. It's so structured for them. But there are these technology bubbles. They're chatting with their friends. They're text messaging. They're on their mobile phones and so forth. They're checking their scores online and listening to music, listening to their iPods while text messaging friends, multitasking online. We see that here, emails for old people. You like that one? This is in Chronicle of Higher Education last month. Emails for old people. What they say, young people aren't doing email anymore. They're text messaging friends and chatting with their friends and so forth. They're in their Facebook and MySpace accounts and doing social networking kinds of things. Kids in high schools are doing language learning online. I know in David's session, there's a woman who's teaching language online. Kids are recording their Spanish and French and Portuguese online. The teacher's grading it online. Kids in college at Ball State here, he's checking his class schedule in the morning before going to class. He's seeing if anything's canceled, of course. That's the first thing kids do. Are any of my classes canceled? But if they're not canceled, he can download his lecture notes and so forth, okay? Technology's a part of who kids are today. It's attached to them. It's just, it probably always was. We had, AM, FM radios that were attached to us, at least to me as a kid. But it's more obvious today. We have to think about the learning possibilities with these technologies. An interesting study that came out a couple of months ago indicates that iPods were the number one in thing. So go on and give away something at the end of this conference, Peggy. Give away an iPod. No. I don't know if you can get sponsors to do that, but maybe. Next year. Come back. All the people who come every year. Number one thing, iPods. Number two thing, the normal number one was drinking beer. This is down to number two this year. Drinking beer on college campus. Facebook's number three. Drinking other alcohol is number four. And text messaging is number five. So I can imagine a kid now text messaging their friends, listening to their iPod, typing into their Facebook and MySpace account while drinking a beer and putting in a shot right next to them. They can multitask all five things at once. Now, when these kids graduate, they want things on demand like they had got in college and they got in high school. And we're providing that for them today. Resources on demand when you need them in the outdoor classrooms and other spaces. We really need to think in college campuses how to utilize all space. how to utilize. We have to think of getting instructors to think about the possibilities of outdoor education, experiences with students. Why are we constrained to classrooms? The most exciting, David talked about stat professors and statistics teaching. The most exciting class I had from a stat professor was held outside. I don't know why that was. We'd have to look at equations, but... Here we also have an article in the USA Today a couple weeks ago about people in the workforce working where? In the local pubs and cafeterias and Barnes & Noble and so forth, learning wherever you are, working wherever you are. Okay? We also have married couples who don't necessarily talk to one another anymore. They are sitting next to each other, text messaging each other and blogging and so forth. Getting gifts for my birthday, he upgraded my RAM, and I thought it was incredibly romantic. Okay, they exchange through webcams, instant messaging, broadband, weblogs, couple surfing. There they are, right next to each other. They aren't talking to each other. Couple surfing. I'm sure you might recognize your spouse there.
Hello.
Okay.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Anyone not in Kansas here? Yes. Okay, what would you like?
Did you say the mug, will you throw it out?
No, you'll have to. The witch will come and bring that to you. She wants a coffee mug and give her a CD. Very good.
She didn't answer. I was just asking.
Oh. Something soft. Something soft.
I'll take a ball.
Okay, so here they are, couple surfing together. They're married for 12 years and communicating through their weblogs. What you do it for 12 years, I guess. Mine's been a bit longer than that. Okay. Don't tell me. Here we've got one way of thinking about different generations of students that we have in our classrooms, whether Gen X, Gen Y, Millennial, Neo-Millennial, Baby Boomers, and Silent Majority. These are somewhat flexible numbers here. Some people believe that the Baby Boomer generation might go to 64, and people have different numbers, but the point is that people grew up with different technologies. It's not necessarily that we learn differently, that we have different learning styles, it's that we've been exposed to different experiences with technologies and pedagogies in our classrooms, and we have different expectations then. The millennial students come having done email, that's old school for them. Email's for old people, right, as I mentioned earlier. They might do research online, they might do instant messaging and so forth, as this indicates. The numbers here indicated that we had 84% owning a computer. I think more recently it's 88% had one computer, 29% came to campus with two or more computers. So 5 years ago, book publishers were worried about providing CDs with books. Well, they have to worry today because computers no longer come with CD drives, but kids are coming with technologies anyways. Chronicle of Higher Education here says that we're spending about 30% more money on technologies than we had in the past. If you watch any parents, I just dropped my son off at college this year, about two blocks from our house, but he's still going off to college. you watch all these parents with laptops, right? And with all sorts of, they're carrying in, no longer, well, televisions maybe, but it's the competing technologies that come with it.
Library, computer.
And they want access. They want access at their libraries. They want to be able to find information, share information, and so forth. They can access campus events in their POM, in their PDA devices, in their handheld devices. They can find out what's going on campus. Here's a Penn State and little late night snacks you can order. Georgetown, not only can you order late night snacks, you can order condoms, by the way. So, you know, they're preparing for everything. Here's Penn State offers mobile news services. Most campuses are thinking about how to provide access to information for students with the technologies that they have. In Korea, they have PMPs, personal multimedia players, where if they miss class, they can get their lecture notes sent to them in their PMPs. Now, their PBS, their equivalent of PBS called EBS, Educational Broadcast System, is providing all their video contents free to all the college kids and high school kids in Korea. Imagine if all the video contents of PBS were provided to you free to use in your classes. You know, BBC is providing something like that in the UK. They have something called the spoken word where they're digitizing all their contents there. But if you look at Google, there are many video contents you can be using in your classes today. We've got a student here who's coming to class who's expecting the college professors to use what our high school professors did, and that was using smart boards, using PowerPoint, using other things in their classroom. And she's not looking too happy here when they're not using them. You have other students like this individual here who says, technology weighs too much. I'm going to put everything on this little device. Another kid here who designed his own computer for the same price that he would have bought a computer from Dell or Gateway, he designed a supercomputer and put it together himself. And these kids are coming to campus. Here's a girl walking across campus doing her text messaging with her friends as she's strolling across the campus, right? Kids today are checking everything online. I did an experiment a year ago. I didn't watch television for 4 months, got everything off the television, off the internet, except one thing. One thing I couldn't get that I needed was when I was in Malaysia and the hurricane hit New Orleans, I needed to watch CNN. Other than that, you can pretty much get everything you need to online. I could have watched some of that online, but it wouldn't have been as effective. So you can order train tickets online, get weather reports online, news online. You can access pretty much anything wherever you go. First thing David said to me when he walked in today at 11 o'clock, he says, we have wireless access here? Okay. How often do your students ask that in your classrooms? Okay. Here's a study done in South Dakota. E-learning is not in Kansas, it's in South Dakota. Kids are saying there, they prefer e-learning over face-to-face. Probably one of the first studies I've seen in that regard. Now, there's been a couple meta-analyses that have come out recently, a review of ed research, as well as a study from the Department of Defense and ADL Labs. They did a meta-analysis of comparing face-to-face and online and blended, and online ends up being slightly better in those studies. Maybe not enough to write home about, but it is better, about an effect size of 0.2, 0.31, somewhere in that range. But it's at least as good as face-to-face.
Hey, Boston, are we online?
Here are the kids coming with multiple technologies to campus.
Hello. I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Okay, anybody?
We're learning is not in Kansas anymore. It's in Southwest Missouri. Thank you.
And where are you from?
Ah,
what would you like?
Can I get a cup?
A cup, yes. She'll bring you a cup. Interactivity. Interactivity in our classrooms are important. Interactivity is online, even more important. We've got older adults in classes, according to Greg Kearsley and other people, that say, you know, they tend to prefer less interaction, want to be lectured to. But I think that's changing. The old behaviorist model. I worked with B.F. Skinner's daughter and husband at West Virginia. It was kind of interesting. When I worked there for 3 years, they said, well, let me show you interactivity. They took me to the computer and they showed me someone tapping the computer keys. That was interactivity from a behaviorist perspective. And we've got many of those people designing online courseware where you click, click, click. We're getting degrees in electronic page turning, and we can do better than that. There's lots of possibilities. I'm going to show you over 100 ideas for pedagogy tomorrow, how to make your courses more engaging. There are many technologies for online collaboration. There's Skype for free online phone calls. There's Google Groups, Yahoo Groups, MSN Groups for online collaboration. All sorts of ways in which to get people to interact online. And Gen Xers and Gen Y are expecting that. They expect stimulation, interaction. They multitask. They multitask. That maybe attention span is not the problem of this group. They're dealing with the information overload of today. The skill of the 21st century that we value is to be able to juggle multiple things, which will prepare you well for president and provost and chancellor kinds of positions, I'm sure. So here we've got Gen Xers. 21st century skill, not the length of the attention span, ability to multitask. And here's an example of Gen X, Gen Y. Gen Y students are entering the workplace.
The matrix is...
Here's a high school student here.
It is all around us. Even now, in this very room, you can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television.
So what does she have there? She's got a computer. She's using it as a footrest. She's got a cell phone. She's got a stereo. She's got a printer, a fax machine. She's probably got 15 chats open. She's doing her homework at the same time. Talking to our friends, multitasking. Traditional instructor focus, traditional me to you, didactic. I'm going to teach you what you need to know. That's the baby boomer generation. Today, the Gen Xer wants options. And in fact, online provides you with the possibility for those options. I always have case A, case B. Debate A, debate B. always make things, you have 10 possible assignments, pick any four. First time I taught professional adults, I taught teachers online, I gave them four assignments like I gave my traditional students on campus, and they hated me. Then I gave them 10 options, and they pick any four, and they loved me. First time I gave them 7 articles to read in addition to the book, and they hated me. Then I gave them 35 articles, pick any 7, they loved me. First time I gave them debates, 7 of them, I assigned them to a debate, they hated me. Next time I said, you create a debate, and they loved it. First time I had a GA help me out, and I said, could you send them reminders every week? Because they're going to hate me for sending them reminders. And what happened at the end of the semester? They hated me. They loved my GA because she sent them the reminders. They're busy people, okay? There's lots of things you can learn about effective facilitation in online environments. I'll get to some of that tomorrow. This young group of students walking through are fluent in many kinds of technologies, many media capabilities. They want to collect, synthesize that information on their own. If I go back here a slide, you can see little quotes here. Online gives me something to do when I'm bored with the professor. I respect myself more as a self-teacher. And that's my son to a T. He doesn't want to go to a sneaking class, especially in a high school class. He wants to learn what he thinks is relevant to him. Okay, he needs to wake up once in a while too, but these kids today want to do things on their own. They want to try things out. They want to get their hands dirty. So did we, but you just didn't have the opportunities. I think we have more opportunities for that today. For active learning, reflective learning, nonlinear, hypermedia types of learning capabilities. To push through where your chain of reasoning is going, where your exploration is going. I think we need possibilities for exploratory learning. It should be 20% of our curriculum. Didactic, traditional, teacher-based in online is about 20%, to be honest. We've tracked it. We've coded it. Modeling's hard online. Collaborative learning should be about 20%. Competitive learning should be about 20%. Individual learning should be 20%. Now, some of you guys are writing this down. I just made all that up. But you get the point. There's more possibilities for embedding in interesting, engaging learning environments. It's about creating learning environments, right, online. Well, here's the 21st century learner at Duke who has an online freshman movie festival. They have to create a movie about the day in the life of a college freshman as a synthesizing experience. And now this idea of movie festivals has gone across the world, not just across the country, but around the world. They actually sell movie tickets to these digital movie festivals, Campus Movie Fest. Something you could think about here in Missouri. Maybe you already have it, but it'd be some way of addressing these kids.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Online learning is not only in Kansas anymore. And I'm from Kansas.
And you're from Kansas? Oh, no. Are you from the University of Kansas?
UMKC.
Okay, great. What would you like? A shirt? A basketball? A what?
A cup.
A cup. Give him a cup. Great. I can't throw those. They would kick me out at that point. Okay, so this younger generation of learners learns in blended spaces. I was in Glasgow at Caledonian University, and Les Watson took me through a cafe that was a computer lab. And I looked at him and I said, how many people come to this cafe? And he said, 200. So there's only about 70 computers here. He said, what do they do? He said, well, they chat and they have pastries and they talk to one another and so forth. We don't need 200 computers here. It's a social space. It's like Barnes & Noble and Borders, you see. He said, look at that building over there. I'm building a cathedral of learning, or castle of learning. He actually built a castle there, Caledonian. Every different floor was involved with different types of learning. They had counseling and tutoring for students on one floor. They had social spaces to collaborate on other floors. They had individual explorations on other floors. Anyways, students want to be mobile, learning in mobile ways, and other kinds of preferences. Now, all this ties into dual coding theory. Dual coding theory, as a former educational psychologist, I'm now in instructional systems technology, is an important theory built by Alan Pavio in Canada. And he talked about the fact that we learn better, or richer, from learning through visuals and text, or learning through animations and text, learning many different ways together. So we might have verbal and visual information that we are able to store more richly and make it not just available knowledge, inert knowledge, it's available, but accessible knowledge. Being able to retrieve that knowledge, more richly ingrained. That's why hypermedia is important. We have multiple retrieval paths. We can retrieve it visually through stories, or retrieve some kind of definitions, be it definitions aren't as important as maybe the story behind them. So if we record things through our ears as well as our eyes, sounds and images, verbals and pictures, we'll have more prior knowledge to retrieve. Okay? And that's the goal. to have the capabilities of animation and narration. If I go back a slide here, words and pictures, animation, narration, whatever combination that we have. Now, Richard Mayer's put together seven principles, and I'll give you just four of his that relates to dual coding theory from a multimedia standpoint. And he has a book about multimedia. He's at UC Santa Barbara, the foremost authority in the field, perhaps, about technology and multimedia. He talks about the verbal system, the visual system, how they work together, words and pictures, but he has a multimedia effect. In fact, that students learn more deeply from words and pictures than from words alone. It's a duh finding, but he found it both in computer environments and face-to-face environments. He found that students learn more deeply with extraneous materials excluded in both book-based and... So, Palau, you don't give them too much stuff. When you present things close to one another, a spatial continuity principle, people learn more deeply when print words and pictures are presented close to one another, both in face-to-face and computer-based environments. And a contextual personalization, the more conversational and the less formal the style, the more likely we'll remember it. And the findings vary by type. For instance, if we look at text and illustrations versus narration and animation, some things have more of a coherence effect, some have more personalization effect. In effect, there was no one way to combine the technologies. It wasn't necessarily we combined narration and animation, or combined text and illustrations. It was the fact that different types of different types of ways of presenting information have stronger, more lasting impacts. There's research out there about animations. There's a lot of it out there. Some of it's kind of kind of common sense findings about attention-getting graphics helping relationships between ideas becoming clearer. Animations help emphasize important points, gain attention. We all know that kind of thing. I'm going to give you 2 minutes to reflect on that first section with someone next to you. What were the top three things? What were the top three things you just learned from that first half of my presentation? Okay? Turn to someone next to you and summarize your top three. Okay. Who's got three things they think are very important things? Three things they got on their list that they just learned. Yes?
Can we start with one?
Sure.
You sort of commented on the digital divide. And here at the University of Missouri St. Louis, we have a fairly unique student population. I taught, for example, at University of Tennessee Knoxville, very traditional population, number one party school in the United States. The
top banana for you. Hey, I finally got one. Anyone else have a comment there? Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that you said students are mobile.
And so are we. You can teach from anywhere. I taught from Iceland, in fact. And students could hear and see me better from Iceland. They could see each other from different spots in Indiana because it's the internet too. It was really fascinating. I taught from China, taught from Washington, D.C., Chicago. We can be anywhere. They can be anywhere. It's changing where teaching and learning happens. Top banana for you, too. One more top banana award. Yes, miss.
I think personalization, because one of the things that I've seen in healthcare, especially with the health insurance plans, is they're trying to personalize and get it to where you're in charge. And you make things to where they feel like they're the ones with the focus, at least if I understood what you're saying.
Yes, and exactly.
So I think that was one of the very interesting things that you were talking about.
Yes, giving personalization some personal ownership over learning, in fact. And this one, I can't get far out of it. Oh, I did. Okay. Now, I've forgotten one thing besides poor Toto here all by himself. I forgot if my witch could help me out here. We've got three things of candy to pass out to the audience. Of course, if you're giving a talk on the web, you have to bring Spider-Man. His head is full of candy. If we could pass that around to the people over here on my left-hand side. And we've got George Bush's head, so something would be in it. We've got some candy in there, and for the lucky people over on the right, we've got my lucky hat. So the woman right here in the front, if you could pass right there, and then the lucky hat over there, that'd be really nice. Okay, great. I don't want to bring that candy home. Okay. So let's take a look at podcast wikis and blogs for a second here. I'm going to give you definitions despite what David said. I think definitions are important. When I gave a talk last month, no one knew what podcast wikis and blogs were. I was really kind of surprised. So I'm going to give that leading figures, instructional ideas, and some examples and some data about each one. So let's start off with some data about blogging. Nobody was doing blogging in 2000, not many people at all, a couple hundred thousand people. By 2004, we're up to 10 million people in the U.S. Look at the growth curve of blogging. Okay? Now, blogging may be less than 1%. Educational blogging may be less than 1%. But 1% of 50 million blogs is a pretty big number. Okay? So while people say that most blogs are for entertainment, sports, and other things, that's okay. We can utilize them in education. But the growth is just phenomenal. It's not just in the U.S., but growth around the world. Now, these are free tools for blogs. There's blogger.com, PTUS, LiveJournal, MovableType. MovableType may be the only one that costs money of those. And now we've got blogging. We've got video behind the blogging because Google bought Blogger and made video capabilities embedded within the blogging tool. So you can have video juxtaposed for dual coding. So we have dual coding for those learners, right? Blogging was the number one defined word last year by Webster's Dictionary. The number one word this year is podcast. Next year will be wikis, okay? You can turn your blog into a book, in fact. There are people who bookbind your blog. Instapundit.com, another person from Tennessee talking about Tennessee. He's a law professor there who became internationally famous talking about laws in Iraq. Millions of people reading his blog. But in education, we have people like Stephen Downs. Now, Stephen Downs has Stephen's Web, and he has a second website. I'm blanking on it for a second here, Old Daily. And Stephen blogs on everything with technology and education. He attends every single conference around the world, if possible, and he'll blog on it so you don't have to go. He reads every single article there possibly is, so you don't have to read it. So go to Stephen's website. Now, Stephen got a little bit perturbed with people last April and stopped blogging for about a month, and he talks about that here, but he has restarted. People gave him some criticism about his blog. Will Richardson, if you're in the K-12 space, has a book on podcasts, wikis, and blogs, and he has a blog. Will Richardson, if you're interested, I just ordered his book, so I don't know if it's any good or not. I just ordered it 2 days ago. If you want to find blogs, there's a website out there called Technorati. You can look, if you have your own blog, you can see who's referencing your blog. You can go to, I did that. It's kind of interesting to see what people are saying about you, actually, former students and others. Google blog, you can go to Google, can look up blogs if you want. Now, blog, here's a definition. You have it in your handouts. I won't read everything to you, but basically, a blog has always been more than a personal journal, according to Stephen Downs. He says it's the hypertext links that are important. It's the ability to take people beyond your reflection. It's a personal diary. A blog is a diary, but it's going beyond that diary. Okay? Blogs, web blogs, blogs for short, are the surprise wedding of the informational capacity of journalism and the speed of instant messaging. So it's journalism and instantaneous. Getting things out and getting feedback from people instead of waiting a year for your article to get some feedback from someone, to get some more immediate feedback. Blog can contain data. According to Brandon Hall, I've got Brandon Hall's definitions of all three, podcasts, wikis, and blogs. Now, a blog is a web journal containing dated entries on a given topic. They can include search, feedback from readers, and links to other sites. They can be written by one person or a group. Blogs can be used to share a viewpoint, enable discussion, present new product ideas, and explain challenges and changes. This week, yesterday, the Chronicle of Higher Ed had this article from the deaf students at Guadalete rebelling against the president that was hired there. They had a blog site. There were a number of blog sites that were set up to get her kicked out. They didn't really like who she was, and blogs were the effective tool for these deaf students. And they did use the word deaf students. I'm being politically correct here in the article. And it's not just a phenomenon in America. 40 million blogs in China now. I had a study that started 2 years ago on blogging in China, and we're still not done with it. And it's probably tripled during the time in which we've been studying, our studies taking place, the number of blogs that we could study. We're looking at students taking ownership of a class in China, which is really an interesting phenomenon taking place there in China, because normally they listen to the instructor. How do we use blogs? We can use blogs for classroom announcements. We can use blogs to share knowledge as instructors. Students can use blogs to reflect on class content. Students can use blogs to collaborate with one another. Who in here has a blog? Who in here has a blog for a specific class? Who in here regularly reads blogs of other people? gentleman there, can you raise your hand again? Yeah. He's fishing for ideas. Let's give him a fish. Pass that back. Okay. Who assigns blogging tasks to their students? Who is, tomorrow I'll talk about how to do that, and I have some other ideas called the Online Resource Library. Who's created a video blog? Anyone have a video blog? Who thinks that it's utter waste of time to blog? The woman there had her hand up first. If you give her the rubber chicken that I passed back, good catch. Okay. So, here's different ways to blog, different reasons to blog. You can have a class blog where you reflect on what's going on. You can have students blog on what they think's happening. You can have them do cross-cultural exchanges within blogs. You can have them summarize a blog, do a nutshell, or summarize what's going on, a blog on a blog. I grade their reflections on the blog. I don't grade every week's blog. I grade their summaries, super summaries of their blog. You can expand on blogs into articles or papers. You can do all sorts of things, paired blogs. Here's some of my students' blogs in my P600 class. Here's my blog. Traveling Ed Man.
What would you do with the brain if you had one?
People blogging on me.
Oh, John, I've got a brain. How can I ever thank you enough?
Well, you can't. One of my students sends me an email. Mark Collin, he teaches art in a high school called Shelbyville High School in Indiana that Oprah Winfrey had on her TV show for a large dropout rate that they had in Shelbyville. He's just hired to teach art and technology. He wrote me an email last month saying, could you look at my blog? My students are coming online. Here's his introduction to his blog. He's setting up a task for his students. He's telling them that they've done a great job. He says, here, you rock. He says, hey, Thomas, I'm wondering if you have friends in Scotland who might want to post. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, so to speak, but it would be cool to see some people over there across the big blue seas. Thomas had just shown up from Scotland. And he asked Tom, and he wrote me this note, and I had just got to Scotland. And I ended up emailing his students back and giving feedback on their blogs from Scotland. Fascinating. I think it was kind of serendipitous that happened.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
Okay, what would you like, a T-shirt or a ball? Sorry. Try. Here are some tools for blogging. You've got them in your hand up. I mentioned most of these are free. Diaryland, Blogger, and so forth. In Korea, they have something called SciWorlds. And watch out, SciWorlds is coming to America. SciWorld kids in Korea spend 3-4 hours a day improving their SciWorld sites. They have social security number equivalents with every site there in Korea, so it can't be fictional. And SciWorlds just got the English version of SciWorlds. It's coming here. SciWorlds is taking off in China and other places around the world. So you think MySpace is happening, Facebook is happening, wait till SciWorlds hits with the gusto that it's happened in Asia. There's a number of studies showing you the distribution of kinds of blogs that are out there. I mentioned earlier sports and entertainment take up the majority in politics, but if education is just 0.5% of the 50 to 75 million blogs in the U.S., and there's 75,000 new blogs a day in the U.S., according to the USA Today, if it's just 0.5%, it's enough to do something educationally meaningful. Now, bloggers out there aren't out there to get money or fame, but they're on the internet a lot. They typically don't publish their writing. This is an unusual activity for them. They tend to be young people. They tend to have a full-time job. They're not making money from their blogs. Here's a girl who got in trouble and kicked off the cheerleading squad in Texas last week for her blog because someone wrote negative comments about other cheerleaders and so forth within her blog, responded to her. It wasn't her post. They thought it was her post. She got reinstated on the team. There's a student of mine from Thailand. His name is Snae Vincent. And Snae wrote up a blog talking about e-learning in Thailand. And then he summarized his blog and submitted it for a conference in Abu Dhabi. And the conference people liked his ideas so much they flew him there. Fully expenses paid, 5-star hotel, and had him present at a conference there in Abu Dhabi. So a student blog got him a long way, got on his resume and so forth. You see the majority of people doing blogs are females. About half of blogs aren't used. They're probably the male blogs. About ages 13 to 30 are the normal age of the bloggers out there. This individual here, Andy Kelvin, has video-based blogs. I'm going to put up a video blog of Andy's. My computer doesn't crash right now, but up will come Andy. You can go to his website and listen to what Andy has to say. This one here is on immigration issues. Down below here, that he's got interviews with this individual here. Interviews with this individual here, and text underneath. Here's his blog. You can click to the video above, a video blog.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Stand up. You learn he's not.
Not in Kansas.
And where are you from?
Where
are you working now?
I work.
You're here. Ball or shirt? Or pen?
The shirt.
Thanks. Very good. Give her a CD. Adventure blogs. Lots of adventure blogs out there. Mount Everest and the oceans blogs and all sorts of things, places you can go to. Here they're talking about young children being killed in Tibet as they head over to try and get to Nepal. Bloggers had watched this event happening on a glacier a couple of weeks back and blogged about it. They made the government aware of what was going on there through their blog. Interesting things. Through their adventure blogs. There's the polls.com. Couple other ones. Explorersweb.com, all sorts of websites for explorers, different stories of what's going on. Think about educational uses of these websites, real stuff going on. If people teach geography or history or different subject matter areas. Okay, so here you've got people going up Mount Everest, having a snapshot before they die when they get to the top. Okay, you can actually have different ambassadors take if you want to go on some of these quests. You can pick up a person that can take you. I won't read this one, but if you could read some of the words there, he's saying, F, it's cold, F, it's cold, F, it's cold. here's Ben Sanders, and Ben's got his little blog about going into the water at the North Pole, and I'll show you that here in a second. Here's Marcus Spillinger. Marcus Spillinger was the first person to go solo underwater at the geographic North Pole, and he filmed himself. He says, I've done it. I think it's the world's coldest dive. I've got frost from my teeth. I've got icicles in my nose. My feet, I feel good after all that because the Russians are coming with the vodka, and so forth. And, so here he is going underwater. He's thinking, I think he's an idiot.
Men will still say, this was their final power.
There's a husband and wife at the South Pole. He's got his headgear on so he can show people back. On the internet, what he sees.
Oh, grant these computers, they're so naughty and so complex.
And he makes his wife type in the blog post because, and look at how numb her fingers look and her nose is about falling off. Of course, the man's just sitting back and relaxing. They've actually got marathons at the North Pole. If you want to go next month, is the North Pole marathon for about $18,000. You can enter in and be a go to the, there's a South Pole marathon. The North Pole was here. You can be a checkpoint person. The first time they ran this, there was a blind person did it in 5 hours, 39 minutes. But someone else did it in 20 hours. Imagine being a checkpoint person, waiting 20 hours for the person to come by. The reason was the person's helicopter was delayed by 15 hours, and they still let them run it. Blogs can get you in trouble. They can get you fired. I got in a little bit of trouble at the first post I made on one of my blogs and was told to delete a little line in there. But even though it was a personal blog, it wasn't on university property. We won't talk about that problem. We've got famous people like Richard Branson here who give talks and have people blog on his talks. So you can, if you don't make it to his talk, you can read the blogs. You've got USA Today a couple weeks ago talking about business blogs. This is actually September 19th, talking about business blogs, showcasing businesses that are putting up blogs to attract customers. So it's not just for higher education. Businesses using this as well. Let's look at wikis. Wikis, people said, would never work. Wikipedia. This guy, Jimmy Wales, who developed Wikipedia, dropped out of Indiana University to do so. He was a PhD student in finance. Now you've got millions of people contributing to wikis around the world. It's all hyperlinked. Remember this notion of multimedia, hyperlink, searching information and so forth online. We not only have Wikipedia, we have Wiktionary for online dictionaries. We have Wikibooks for people creating online books, and I'm doing research on that. Wikinews, Wikiquotes, Wikispecies, and Wikiversity, or Wikiversity. So you have an online university of information as well. You can go to Wikidictionary and get synonyms and antonyms and pronunciations and spellings of words. You can find out how Wikipedia is making money. They make about $300,000 a month through donations. It's all donations. For the Wikipedia Foundation, if you want to give money, I don't have any claim to it, so I can just point that out. Jimmy Wales here, who's developed Wikipedia with Larry Sanger, is a top 100 person within who shaped the world within Time magazine this year. There's an article that chronicled higher education last week that talks about the problems of Wikipedia as well as the potential of Wikipedia. This is Jimmy Wales here. He admits that there are flaws, that there are problems at the Wikimania conference and other places. They have mixed reviews within Wikipedia. It was compared to Encyclopedia Britannica, and they found 160 errors in Wikipedia and 130 errors in the same amount of content in Encyclopedia Britannica, and found them to be fairly similar in terms of the number of errors. Encyclopedia Britannica was irate about this, okay? And they've had a lot of debate and rebuttals that were posted as a result of that study in Nature, that appeared in Nature magazine. This is Larry Sanger, who started Wikipedia and believed that it needs more peer review. And so he's creating another website, and I'll try and pronounce it. It's called Citizendium. That will have more peer-reviewed kinds of encyclopedia content out there. I also heard he's building something called Digital Library for high-level quality video content online on different things like nanotechnologies, biotechnologies. You get all sorts of video content that's been peer-reviewed.
Hello? I'm repeating, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nobody's okay, we'll keep going. It's where? Okay, what would you like? I have two balls left, a pen, and a...
What is that?
Paperweights.
Thank you.
A pen. Give her a pen. Great. Okay, how do we define wikis? A wiki is a collection of web pages that can be easily viewed and modified by anyone, providing a means for sharing, learning, and collaboration. It can be created on the fly. They are free contents. Highly collaborative contents. Authors do not claim ownership, unlike the previous definition says there is some degree of ownership. They provide a history of who's seen the wiki. So it's free content, collaborative content, posted online, on the fly. They are writing space. I'm a former writing researcher, so I find wikis fascinating to look at collaborative writing on the internet. The internet's a gigantic writing tool, if you will. So, building writing, editing writing, revising writing, there's no one authority. They provide for activities for you as a teacher. You can have students edit a Wikipedia entry. You can have students create a wiki book. I had my students with the students at the University of Houston create a wiki book last semester. We wrote a book online as a collaborative activity. You can have students write a class essay within a wiki. You can have them share resources. And to be honest, the sharing of resources was the most powerful thing. Everyone kept saying, put it in the wiki, put it in the wiki. And we found it in the wiki. So the wiki book didn't work quite as well as we had hoped. And again, there are many wiki kinds of tools out there. Wiki books is to create a collaborative book. Wikiversity is an online resource of curriculum materials, syllabus and contents and so forth. Wiki quotes is just what it says. Now, what does wiki mean? Wiki can mean what I know is, W-I-K-I. But to be honest, it means quick, the quick web. This is Ward Cunningham, who was stuck in Hawaii a couple of years back, actually about 10 years ago, and asked for directions on how to get to the airport, and they said, take the WikiWiki, which meant take the quick bus to get there. And he was creating something called the quick web. And he soon changed the quick web name to Wiki. If he hadn't been in Hawaii, we would now call all wikis quick web. Just as an aside.
feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Very good. What would you like? You'll have to come and get that. I cannot do it. Okay, questions. How many of you regularly read Wikipedia articles for fun? Okay, I saw the lady's hand. Where was it? Right there. You got a fish for fishing. Okay. Who regularly reads wiki books? Anyone read wiki books? You read wiki books. Very good. Sorry, behind you. Who seeks Wikipedia for content? The gentleman way back there. But it's behind you. Okay. Who has edited or written a Wikipedia entry or a wikibook? Anyone entered an entry in Wikipedia? You have. You have. Wow. Okay. Who thinks it's okay for college students to cite from Wikipedia? Sorry, gentlemen, to your right there. Yeah. There are a lot of softwares out there. Some of these, so you can download the software tool, put it on your own server. There are also, there's Tweaky Wiki, there's PB Wiki, peanut butter, it's as good as peanut butter. Let me go back here. So we've got Tweaky Wiki, CD Wiki, PB Wiki. PB Wiki is the one we're using. We're also using Media Wiki. There are a lot of different resources available within wikis. I'm just going to skip over some of these for the sake of time. Let me point out, in my study of wiki books, we found that the average age of wiki bookings is under age 25. We found that the majority are males. And the same is true of trolls in Wikipedia. Almost all the trolls, one of my colleagues is studying trolls, all of them are males. All the sysop operators in Wikipedia are males, by the way, which is interesting. Years of schooling, about half have less than a college degree, a four-year college degree. Those putting up books, okay, online. Most have been involved in wikis for more than 1 year. Most think they want to share knowledge and personal growth. When we ask our college students why they got involved in the wiki book project, most are doing it for publishing reasons, publish or perish, not for social reasons, which was fascinating. I would have thought the opposite reasons. What else here? Most felt the project was successful. Most felt that no one owned the book, or everybody owned it. Whereas our college students felt like there was more ownership involved, that they owned it. Can it ever be completed? About two-thirds thought a book could be completed online, but there are a lot of problems. We just got a lot of qualitative data here about the problems that people face in building a wiki book. This is our website for creating a wiki. We had a roster. We had question and answers. We had students that were paired up in Indiana and the University of Houston together. They gave themselves feedback online. So here's Brian giving feedback to Shung Yi, one of my students. And then they picked topics that they're working on and posted their chapters online. And again, for the sake of time, I'm just going to skip over some of these things. I'll come back to some of it tomorrow. We're now tossing out traditional textbooks. Some people are putting up their books online for feedback and not sending them to reviewers. They put them up for the general public. An article in the Chronicle called Web 2.0 talked about this issue. We now have electronic books available online that you can access that are free, but they have advertisements on the side. Stanford is creating a wiki for their students, where students can put anything up that they want, on sports, volunteer activity, photos, university life, campus buildings. Okay, third technology, podcasts.
It is Friday. It's August 26, 2005.
You might recognize that individual. Anybody recognize him?
Adam Curry.
His name's right up there. Adam Curry from MTV. Very good. He was the first Napster before Napster became hot. He's now the number one podcaster in the world. He has a syndicated podcast show out of Guildford, England, south of London. That's his podcast studio there. I'll skip over some of that. We're getting a lot of audio today. I don't read books much anymore. I listen to them. I have two books I'm listening to right now in my car. A lot of you probably are. At Learn 2005 last year, they gave everyone audio devices to interview famous people, and they posted them to the internet. There were no keynotes. People created their own keynotes for the conference through audio.
Hello, I'm Bob McDonald.
Welcome to Quirks and Quarks, the national science program of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Podcasting. Putting lecture notes up online for students, lectures up online, content, expert discussions, and so forth.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
E-learning's not in Kansas anymore. It's here in St. Louis.
Very good. What would you like? I have a ball left and I have a ball.
Oh,
I guess you get a ball. Hey! Give her a CD. So now we've not only got podcast text, we've also got video with the text. So you now have podcasting with the new video iPods. You can do podcasting so you can have a video wrapped around the audio files. A podcast, it provides a way to distribute an audio or video episode via internet for playback. ComView. This is a new technology. ComView has a technology that is free right now, that lets you put lectures on the internet for free with your handheld mobile phones. You just talk in if you're at the beach in Florida and you want to give a lecture, okay? This stuff's coming. Who has listened to a podcast? Okay, looks like the gentleman right there is fishing. Yeah, behind you. There you go. Who listens to a certain podcast on a regular basis? Very good. Behind you, sorry. Who has created a podcast? Who has created a podcast? No? Who thinks podcasting is simply more talking heads? Me, I get the rubber chicken. Okay, no, I love podcasting. It's great. Podcasting, about 6% of the population is viewing, listening to podcasts or involved in podcasts, just like blogging. There are now people looking at podcasts as having access to knowledge at your fingertips. Fingertip knowledge.
Welcome to Learning 2006 University. My name is Elliot Macy. Today is September 5th, and our topic is fingertip knowledge. Every time that your fingertip...
Every time you go to Google and look something up, it's fingertip knowledge, he says. Okay? So, what Elliot Macy does is he interviews people. And you can watch the video clip. You can listen to the podcast, or you can read the transcripts. Again, addressing dual coding. There's a text version. There's a video version. There's both, if you need both. Okay, so they might do a tour of something, put it in video format.
Welcome to Learning 2006 University. This is Elliot Macy, and today is October 2nd. I have the honor of speaking with Chad Wick, the president and CEO of KnowledgeWorks Foundation. Hello, Chad.
Hi, Elliot.
You're going to get a chance.
So you can listen to him, you can go to the transcript, you can go to the video in some cases. Okay? And that was there's the transcript. Right there's the transcript. Kids in schools are doing podcasts and blogs, and parents can track what's going on in schools. Communities, countries are involved in world bridges, where we get people to connect and learn from one another around the world. We have webcast discussions on topical issues, controversial issues. Perhaps you get the Dalai Lama like this in a podcast. This is the Dalai Lama on a podcast. If you can understand Chinese, which I can't. I'm going to skip over that. Purdue has put all their classes up in Boilercast. Indiana is putting our courses up at Indiana University. Does anyone want a Hoosier by birth? A couple people, great. You might appreciate this little song here. Okay, well, I should skip over that. Kids in schools are doing podcasts, as I mentioned.
This rap about the zebra mussels. What's that?
Follow along with here.
Zebra mussels kind of a vibe. Rap. When they die, we won't miss it.
These kids are a little better singers. These are middle school kids. Not too bad.
James, it all became an issue in 1969. Ever since then, it's a tragic climb. You'll never know what'll happen in 200 years. The only water left will be everybody's tears.
Okay, everybody. A little Joan Jett in us, right? Okay, we're going to have some music here in the reception in a few minutes. I'm almost done, by the way. All right. I know. Rock and roll. We're going to get some rock and roll real quick. Okay. Chinese Pod. How many people have been to Chinese Pod? Fascinating website. You can learn Mandarin online now. There we go. We got free resources up there.
Hi, I'm Ken Carroll.
Ken Carroll's been interviewed all over.
www.chinesepod.com. This is Chinese Pod.
So there's Ken and there's Jenny coming to you. They do topics, holidays, fitness, diet, technology, food, dating, jobs, pickup lines, all sorts of things they do. Tea ceremonies.
Teachers in your pocket, excellent resources.
Do you hear what he said? Great teachers in your pocket, excellent resources on the web. Teachers in your pocket. Your iPod's in your pocket. We now have teachers 24/7 next to us.
Great teachers in your pocket, excellent resources on the website. Learn Mandarin with Chinese Pod.
Hello, welcome to Chinese Pod, bringing you the most valuable, interesting, and authentic Chinese from Shanghai. I'm Jenny.
Okay, thanks, Jenny. And they have videos wrapped around to show how language is misused in a real environment, okay? They call them video hot pots. They've been interviewed on CNN. You can go to their tape and watch a little bit about what's going on. But it's not just about Chinese anymore. We've got Arabic being studied online. You can go to iTunes and get all sorts of languages, Italian, French, whatever. You get JapanesePod101.com. You get other people teaching you Chinese online. You get the Princeton Review online, all sorts of things. You know, Stanford, if you never could afford Stanford, you can go to Stanford on iTunes and download lectures and hear Stanford professors. But not just Stanford professors, but now Berkeley's up there as well, and other universities are putting contents up free on the internet. Some little points here. Short and to the point, not loaded with URLs, conversational style. We tend to make our podcasts about 10 minutes long, 15 minutes long. We tend to have a script of question and answer, kind of a script of controversial issues, things in the news that relate to the chapter. I often will do a podcast right before I go to a conference to have some social presence with my students. If I'm going to be gone for a couple of days, I put up a podcast. It's a nice way to keep that social presence alive. There's a number of educational podcast syndications out there. There are a number of portals for podcasts, like Podcast Alley. There's podcast.net. You can get things in science and nature, politics, society, and so forth. Educational podcasts, elementary, middle school, high schools, secondary schools. One of my students sent me a note last week, and lost my mic, but I'll bring it back.
And then we're going to look into God's Word today.
And Matt is a minister in a church. And I looked him up on iTunes. He says, we're doing stuff at the church in iTunes. And I started listening to his sermon. I'm not much, well, I haven't gone to church in quite a while. I need to admit to that. But anyways, I listened to Matt give a couple of sermons. I gave him some feedback on them. And he had everything up in his iPods and iTunes. Really fascinating to keep up with your students in iTunes. Anyway, podcasts. How to use podcasts. You might use them to put lectures up online. You might have students do projects online, language lessons online. Interviews of people online, practice their language online. We have a website in Indiana called Instructional Consulting, and we have a session called Teach with Tech that teaches people how to do podcasting. We have 13 free episodes. If you want to learn how to do a podcast, type in Google Instructional Consulting, Indiana University, Teach with Tech, and you can get through that session. Chris Essex is going to come on here in a second and talk a bit about Teach with Tech. He likes the rock and roll. He follows groups all around the world.
Welcome back. This is Teach with Tech, and I'm Chris Essex from...
And here we're doing another session here. We're doing a little bantering. He's interviewing me, he has all the music. Everyone's got to have their music on the front end. I'll skip over that.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need...
Just let me wrap up here and finish since we've run out of time. Thinking about these technologies, podcasts, wikis, and blogs. It's not just about the technologies. We could be talking about virtual reality. We could be talking about e-portfolios. We could be talking about learning objects, simulations, and gaming. There are 30, 40-odd technologies that could have been the discussion of this keynote. These three technologies seem to be personally empowering, which makes them a little bit different. It enables students to have some ways to build a podcast, build as part of a wiki, build their own blogs, write their own blogs. But that's really not the important. It's about, think about the pedagogy that wraps with these technologies. Think about the personalization. Think about how to be more learner-centered. To think about how to get things for dual coding for students, visuals and verbals, text and visuals and so forth. So as we look ahead 10 years, 5 years, 2 years down the road, these technologies will matter, but it's also about our pedagogies. So, podcast, wikis, and blogs, yes?
Are you ready?
Are you ready now? Yes, we're all ready. Let's go have a break. Let's go get some refreshments and so forth. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kurt, for a very provocative talk. I just want to mention a few housekeeping things, but before that, I want to mention also that that University of Missouri is also on iTunes. We've signed an agreement with Apple to put University of Missouri on iTunes. Columbia has been doing it for a few months now. University of Missouri St. Louis will be doing it soon. So, what's the saying? E-learning is right. So I want you all to take up Kurt's challenge to attend his talk tomorrow about the pedagogy that wraps around this technology. I agree fully with Kurt that even though I'm a technology person, that really is about the pedagogy and it's about learning, it's about teaching. So I'm sure his talk tomorrow will be as fascinating as today's.